All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to What the Health Just Happened, where we talk about all things healthcare, the good, the bad, the ups, the downs, the lefts, the right, and everything in between. Topics of discussion? A little bit of healthcare, a little bit community, a little bit business, a little bit life. Today's guest is not my first, but you are my first in this studio. We just said that. TJ Ward with Project Opioid. This is your third time, right?
Yeah. We're doing a hat trick here. The hat trick. Am I the first third?
You're the second third. I'll shout out to Katie Howard. She wore a shirt that said 3P.
Because I was the first.
You were the first two-time person.
Yeah.
Second three-time person. But first time in here. We're not in the radio studio. We're going to kind of pilot this out. Abby's over there. She's not on camera. Can you say hi, Abby? Just say, oh. Project Opioid. Very heavy topic. Ups and downs, lefts and rights. Good stuff and bad. I think today we have some good news I love. But we're going to laugh too, because I want to talk about being a dad, being 50. I'm not there yet, but can you believe this guy's 50? Abby said, don't bring that up.
Well, hold on. Do your parents, do they look young as well?
No. Actually, my parents were almost 40 when I was born. So, but look too young for their age. So
there we go.
Genetics.
I guess genetics definitely plays a part.
TJ Ward, welcome. I'm excited. Where do you want to start? Serious or not serious?
You tell me. Let's start not as serious. And then.
Okay. So if you want serious, which we'll get to, we have two previous episodes. I'll share those in the notes. First time, first episode, kind of first time hanging out, talking, heavy. Second time, still heavy. But, like, are we friends yet? I'd say we're friends.
I'd say we're boys.
We are boys.
We need to hang out. Okay. I mean, your schedule is kind of crazy.
Yours is, too.
Your kids are in that.
I got little ones.
Mine are grown.
Let's start there.
Yeah.
Good dad, right? We love celebrating good dad. So it was just Father's Day.
Yeah.
We clapped it. Whoa, wow. Cowbell here. That's loud. We're not doing that again.
That was
sorry. I'm sorry, Trey. Adult kids.
Yeah.
You have adult kids. I have young kids. You have a good relationship with your daughters?
I would say so. They still want to hang out with me, and they're 25 and 22 now, so I think that's a good thing, right?
That's a win. Yeah. If my kids want to hang out with me when they're adults, like, that's a win.
Yeah.
What do you enjoy doing with your daughters?
So we're getting ready to go to the beach next week, so I'm pumped about that. Being able to just hang out with them, you know, at the pool or walk down the beach and have some...
Like Jack's some Beach talks. Or where?
No, I'm a little further south. I don't want to give away the location.
I
don't top secret.
Yeah, hide that. Yeah. Good spot, though.
But just hanging out with them, working out with them, just talking life.
Are they workout junkies?
Oh, yeah. Both of them are really into going to the gym and trying to be fit, just like most all of us, right? Trying to
eat
a little healthier.
Now that more of us need that. Yeah. Did you teach them that? Were you working out in front of them? How did that happen?
Yeah, I think... They would probably say that was definitely an part of the influence. They've been athletes since they were little, played sports. And obviously, you know, when you get older and you're trying to compete at a higher level, that's one of the requirements is getting in the gym and trying to get stronger, faster, all of that. But they just fell in love with, I think, the growth you can experience, you know, when you push yourself to be disciplined. They probably saw some of that in me, I hope. But they definitely have that.
You hope.
That work ethic.
You got two adult daughters that work out, right?
Right.
Exercise with you and want to hang out with you. That's a win.
It's pretty cool.
That's a win. That's helping you. That's helping.
Yeah. So
I got 9, 8, and 6. Trey, how old are yours? I always forget.
Mine are 6, 3, and 2.
Yeah. Working out in front of the kids, to me, then they're like, I want to work out with you.
Right.
I'll walk out there. My son's doing push-ups at 9.
That's cool.
His form's terrible, by the way.
That's okay. He's got time.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I love you, Everett. So beach next week.
Yeah.
Spring break. Not spring break.
No, it's summertime.
That's how delusional I am. Yeah. I'm lost. So, what day, what year, et cetera.
Right.
So growing up as a dad, young kids, did you lose track of time?
You know, it's so cliche, but it flies by. And especially when they get to that place where they are doing those extracurriculars and that kind of determines what your schedule becomes. And then, you know, it's work during the week and then travel on the weekends to watch them play ball or
after an hour practice,
all that stuff. But I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah.
It's awesome. But it flies by. You're going to, yeah, you'll look back on it and think, what happened?
Already, man. Already it's flying by.
But I think, and I told you this offline, I think you do a great job of maximizing opportunities with your kids. I don't want this to be like the Mutual Admiration Society for dads, but I mean,
we
got
to
boost each other
up. We love
that
talk.
You do a great job of really being present with
your
kids.
Yeah. Thank you. So
I love that you film a lot of that. You put, you know, the selfie videos and put it on.
I do. I don't know if the kid, I don't want to teach my kids that though. That's weird. I want to talk about social media actually with the kids. Then we'll talk about obviously fentanyl overdose.
Yeah.
Really depressing stuff, but good numbers. So the selfie stuff, my kids love it. They laugh, but I don't want to create that monster of like, I want selfies, I want videos. But I think it's like the stuff I put out is for lessons for other dads.
Sure.
Kind of comical. Where'd your daughters go to college?
So my youngest went to a private university called Point University.
Okay.
And she played volleyball on a scholarship. So that was cool.
I'd ring that bell, but it was way too loud.
Yeah.
She's at the University of Georgia doing her master's degree, just finished her first year of graduate school. 4.0.
Dang.
Yeah, so.
That's correct. We can clap. We need to clap. No more cowbells. The cowbells put away.
But she's a bulldog, and I guess when I go to Athens, I'm kind of a bulldog.
Do you wear Georgia stuff?
I have one Georgia golf polo that I put on when I'm in Athens.
And
other than that, I'm a Florida Gator other than that, so. Then my oldest went to UNC Pembroke for her undergraduate, and she's doing some graduate work at the University of Montana online, obviously. She lives here in Jacksonville.
I'm like, wow, yeah, she's in Montana. Okay.
So.
Dude, that's a good dad.
Yeah, man.
I'm impressed. They're good kids.
Marriage, isn't it?
Yeah. So I'm trying to do a little side work and save up for
save
those weddings.
Yeah. You know?
Those weddings are coming before.
So two things.
I know it.
One is, that's all I think about. My daughter's six. I'm like, I got to start saving money now. Cause
yeah.
Dear Lord.
Does she, like, does she have
boyfriends at six?
No.
She better not. They're dead if they are dating. Okay.
So I have one that is very kind of bougie.
Fancy?
Yeah.
Oh.
Loves the finer things in life. I have one that's a little more practical when it comes to spending money. I won't say which is which, but they're each a little different. So I wondered, can you tell yet? Does she like the finer things?
She has two older brothers and a dad that's rough around the edges. Like my wife likes some nice stuff.
I mean, you like nice stuff too. I see what you're wearing.
Oh, dude, this is a company spot, by the way, 212 Benefits. Thank you for the cup and the stuff. Yeah, I'm like,
yeah, shout out to our sponsors.
Oh, that's right. Ghost Energy
Tenor.
Come on that.
We're not sponsored yet. We would love to be.
I don't like bougie stuff, man. And it's hard to tell. She's young and she has big bros. So she's like tough. And dude, what about the golden goat stuff?
What shorts are you wearing?
I'm wearing fancy shorts. I'm wearing Lululemon goat shorts from.
Yeah.
Dang it.
Oh, yeah, man. Y'all called me out pretty bad on that. Not healthy.
So one daughter fancy, one not as fancy.
Both awesome. Beautiful, beautiful girls inside and out. But one definitely somehow got a silver spoon, and the other one is like, okay, we can make do with some, you know, some normal stuff. But the other one likes the nice stuff.
So the wedding too, it's like, are in either serious relationships, a wedding coming up?
No.
You don't have to. She'd be like, I don't want to talk about this. You can be like, we're changing topics, but
let's talk about it. Yeah. So my youngest does not have a serious boyfriend. She's really, her schedule's crazy with grad school.
Oh,
and then she also works. She's a graduate assistant for the program that she's taking. So she's working pretty much full time and then in school full time. My oldest does have a boyfriend that's on the serious side, but I like him.
Yeah, that was my next question.
Yeah. I think I told you we hung out.
Yes.
A couple of Friday nights ago, we got invited to, my girlfriend and I got invited to dinner with her and her boyfriend. So
it was like an honor.
Yeah.
But you also had fun.
Yeah. I like
get along.
He's a good guy.
Because you and I could take him. I promise you. We could take him. Trey, you'd be happy.
But if you want to help, but I don't think we would ever need that for him.
He's a good guy.
So that I could see a wedding in the not too distant future for them.
Okay. Just like that. Just like that. I got
to go with your bias.
That's all I think about now. Mm-hmm. Do you know your wedding song for each daughter? I told my daughter, she's six. I play it every single night before bedtime. What's a Revolution song?
Which one?
I can't sing it. When all of this is said and done, you will be alone. This is the first time I sang on this show. It's a great song. I'll send it to you. I already know my daughter's and I's wedding dance song, but it's not my choice.
I could see you being one of those, y'all come up with a routine.
100%.
And you just bust out and do like...
All of it.
Yeah.
All of it. Yeah.
Crazy dance
moves. I'm like crazy dance
moves. Yeah.
What else personal stuff you want to share? Anything before we go into the heavy stuff?
I mean, we, other than hanging out with them and trying to stay in shape myself, we've been pretty hard at it with Project Opioid stuff over the last 6 months, especially the last three, I would say. It's starting to be a lull just because summertime is what it is, but we'll ramp back up in August. But we've got some stuff that we're planning for and some things that we've been excited about. So
what's busy? Is it meeting cities, counties, companies? Like what's a good busy week versus a like, hey, we wasted so much time doing X?
Yeah. So we work in 10 different counties, or we did last year. I think that expands a little bit this year. We actually got an opportunity to head down toward the panhandle and kind of spread out a little bit further than we had anticipated.
Yeah.
But
surprise.
Shout out to Florida Blue. They're one of the reasons we're headed that way to really do some presentations in their centers out in Tallahassee and Pensacola. So we're excited about that. That's coming up in July. We've done a couple of those here in town at the town center and then out at the River City Marketplace, and those went really well. Spending a lot of time with the senior adult population, educating them on the dangers of opioid misuse and preparing them with Narcan training and helping them with the safe disposal of prescription meds.
Expired or too much of one script? Like when do you say dispose of this medication?
Yeah, so if it could be a number of different things. So for instance, when I had my wisdom teeth taken out, they prescribed me, this was years ago, they prescribed me, you know, a number of Oxycontin. I took one, it made me sick, so I didn't take any of the rest of them, and they just sat in my house for a long time. This was before I was doing the work that I'm doing, so I didn't know any better, and I think I just threw it away. So a scenario like that, we would give them, you know, a pouch that they could take home and dispose of that prescription med, or even over-the-counter meds that have expired that they're not using. So rather than letting that stuff sit around, you know, we think people should dispose of it responsibly, because what we do know is a lot of, especially young people, get started down that road of misuse because they're taking prescription meds from their grandparents or from their parents, you know, that are just sitting around in a medicine cabinet or under a sink somewhere. And if they're not using it, they need to get rid of it.
You were about to say something.
Yeah. So you mentioned like working with, you know, the older population. Maybe it's naive of me, but there is a case where a lot of elders are overdosing on these opioids.
Yeah. So when it comes to them, they may take their prescription med and then they forget that they've taken it. So they take it again.
Gotcha.
And that can push them into an overdose. And then, or they run out of their prescription med for some reason, they're having a problem getting it covered by insurance. They turn to the street where it's cheaper.
Insurance.
And then that is, you know, laced with fentanyl. So that can cause unintentional poisonings. We, you know, we say overdose because it all gets lumped in, but some of it's accidental poisoning.
So there's two-part question here.
Sure.
I look at buckets of age groups. What's a generation? Is it 10 years, 15 years, 20 years? But to me, right, 65 and older is one, 85 and older is one. We'll say every 10 years. How many older adults, I don't want to say 50 and older because I'm almost there.
That's me.
We just recognize you as 50. Let's say, again, 65 and older, that's Medicare population. How many of them do you think are misusing medications intentionally?
I think that would be a smaller percentage, but you never know. I mean, the mental health crisis impacts everyone. So, you know, somebody that knows what an antidepressant can do for them, you know, may overuse it if they're feeling
two feels better than one.
Yeah, if they're depressed or struggling with anxiety or trying to deal with some kind of trauma they experience. So, but I think it's a smaller percentage that are intentionally misusing.
Yeah, I'm guilty because like I love specific numbers, statistics. We'll talk about the CDC here in a second, what came out, which is awesome. But the majority of people that are overdoses versus misuse, what was the term you used?
Accidental.
Accidental.
Yeah.
That's probably the younger population. Is that fair to say?
Well, so you have both with the younger population. You have some that are experimenting. You have some that are intentionally seeking, you know, a drug like fentanyl. And then you have some that are again, trying to cope with some anxiety or depression. And they're not trying to get high. They're just trying to
cope with that,
escape a little bit.
Yep.
And so they take what they think is a Xanax and they overdose. It's a poisoning. Or you've got college age kids that are trying to
Adderall, Xanax, Oxys. Yeah.
Adderall's so they're trying to study for finals and finish their term papers and they're feeling overwhelmed. So they need what they think is a boost or a leg up. They get an Adderall and it's laced with fentanyl. We've sat with several parents.
Hey, I'm guilty. I'll tell you right now, this is 20 plus years ago.
Yeah.
I had an Adderall script. I don't think we've talked about that. I had an Adderall prescription for years and had problems with it. I'd overtake some days, undertake some days, but I had a script for it. It wasn't buying off the open market. But in college, I don't mind sharing things that I've done that were stupid.
Right.
I did it, gosh.
Were finals you in week? Tens or were you in 30s?
You're correct. And who has Adderall?
Release first.
Yeah, well, and the problem becomes, if you're overusing, then you run out and you don't have enough until the next month. So you turn to somebody on campus that you can buy it from. And they
where did that come from?
Yeah. It's
is that out of fentanyl?
It's happened over and over and over again.
That's like I have a love-hate relationship with you coming on because this is a serious topic that I love talking about. It's important, but I also hate it because it's tough, man. I think about my kids. I think about the dumb things that I did from 16 to 22.
But when we were doing it, which would be what, 2003 to 2010-ish?
2001 to 2006.
Even a worry, I guess. So what changed since then?
That's a great question. When did that
happen? It wasn't even a thought in our minds when we were doing it.
So what changed was drug dealers realized that they could create these pills for way cheaper than what they were, you know, purchasing heroin for and trying to distribute. So it's strictly an economic thing. You've got, you know, people that are creating these synthetic opioids instead of having to purchase heroin that has to be in a specific climate, it has to be grown, it has to be harvested. And then, you know, it's so much easier. And, you know, if you have the precursors, all the materials, you can make some of these pills at home. You've got people that are buying pill presses as well as the materials to make fake pills, and they can do that in their own home, in their basement, or you know, wherever.
Do you think there is a percentage of these guys that actually are making product that doesn't hurt people? It's just the 10% of the weasels that are, you know, getting it out there into the population? Or
I think everybody that's trying to make money is utilizing fentanyl. They're not trying to intentionally kill people because And we get this question all the time. Why would they put it?
You lose a client.
You're going to lose the client.
Oh.
The answer to that is they aren't necessarily trying to kill people. And there may be some that are, you know, but by and large, they're just trying to get those clients to come back to them. So if they have the best stuff, you know, I don't know if you remember that movie with Denzel Washington and an American Gangster.
Yes. Are you kidding me?
Was it Blue Magic or
something? That's like my go-to time. I love that movie. You ever watch Breaking Bad, by the way?
I haven't.
Dude.
So my oldest daughter just said, we're in the last season.
Let's not go off topic yet because we're going to go on to that show. This, you talk about economics of
yeah. I want to
drugs. I hate to say it.
I need to check it out.
The fentanyl thing, again, I don't know, for now, but I try to stay aware of what's happening. Can you buy just straight fentanyl on the market here? Are drug users going out I just want fentanyl? Or is it just primarily mixed into other drugs?
Well, there are people that are fentanyl seeking and that will just consume straight fentanyl because they have a tolerance. They've built up a tolerance to everything else. So, and you can get fentanyl through the mail. A lot of times, you know, the way that it gets from other countries into the United States is through the mail. So People like, are...
So someone came... This is so bad, because...
U.S. Postal Service, baby.
Yeah. Well, you got to think about the amount of packages that go through the U.S. Postal Service and the amount of inspectors. Abby, what is it?
It's like 1,200 for the entire country.
Say it again. So...
Yeah, so for however many millions of pounds of mail that come into the United States
a day
yeah, there's like 1,200 agents nationwide.
Inspecting, that's the Postal Service. What about FedEx?
Yeah.
They're just moving packages. I don't know that, I could be wrong, but I don't know that private packaging, they're just probably trying to move product and get paid.
It's got
to
be long. I feel bad. Normally, like, I didn't know this would come up either, but like research, how many inspectors are there for FedEx and UPS? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's got to be comparable numbers of the Postal Service, but so millions of pounds of mail sent per day, 1,200 inspectors. Is that what you just said? Divided by 50 states, like that's not enough.
And, you know, you got to think about, so we partner heavily with law enforcement. We feel like they are a key factor in, you know, obviously stopping this and helping to reduce overdose deaths, and they do a phenomenal job, but there's just not enough law enforcement agencies or officers to completely stop the flow of it into the country. And sometimes we get that question as well. People say, why don't they just do a better job of keeping it from coming in? The answer to that is it takes 2 milligrams of fentanyl to make a huge impact. When you think about that, that's a really small amount. So it becomes easier to smuggle, and, you know, the DEA and some of our other partner agencies are doing a tremendous job. Each year they seize more and more of these, you know, drug shipments, but they can only do so much.
This is a very difficult question to ask. Like, if you could do one thing right now to make an impact, what would it be? Not you, like, per se, like the United States could do this right now and this would make the biggest impact.
Man, that's
tough. We talk about three things, right? Increased awareness, increased distribution in Narcan's a big deal, increased peer support specialists. That's to decrease overdoses, but to like cut back on the problem.
I mean, we don't want to get too far into politics, but you would have to secure the borders.
I was going
to more
ask
strongly. And again, even even if you had an increased presence, you would still have people bringing stuff across. It's just impossible to completely shut down.
Mathematically,
we could stand to secure the borders a little more.
I don't mind talking about that. We only got 2 minutes till the commercial break, but like, I know Trey chomping at the bit. I think everything should be on the table to talk about.
Sure.
If there's one thing, I'm not a border patrol agent. I don't understand enough, but if it's free reign to go here and there and whenever you want, whenever you please, drugs are a lot easier to get in.
Yeah. We know a large amount of fentanyl comes to us from, you know, over in Mexico. You've got a couple cartels that are really responsible for the overwhelming majority of it, and that's how it's getting through.
I thought you wanted to chime in there.
I will, but it's a long explanation or question.
Wait till the second half?
Yep.
Okay. We got about a minute left here to the first commercial break, unless you're on the podcast or in commercials. That was heavy. Let's go back to lighthearted. Any shout outs before the commercial break?
Yeah, I wrote down a few of those.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, want to shout out Florida Blue because they fund our initiative.
Okay.
Florida Blue Foundation. And Jack's Chamber. And you know, as a Jack's Chamber, what are you, Small Business Leader of the Year?
I am no one. I am irrelevant.
Come on, man.
SBLY for the Jack's Chamber Health Council. It's been fun, but.
And I would like to shout out my colleague, Abby. She's behind the scenes.
Abby, we don't have a camera.
She does a lot of our work, especially when it comes to scheduling and detail stuff. So she's a huge part of what we're doing.
She does the stuff that you don't want to do or can't do.
Yeah. I'm not smart enough to do.
I'll shout out to Abby, too. Abby's been good people.
And then my daughters. So my oldest is Dacey, D-A-C-E-Y.
Dacey.
I have to spell it out.
Okay.
A lot of times people call her Daisy or...
What's her boyfriend's name, by the way?
Jeremiah.
Jeremiah, you get a shout out too.
Yeah,
we're coming for you, man.
Jeremiah is a stud. He's a good guy. And then Whitney's my youngest.
Okay, so Daisy and Whitney.
Yeah.
Yep. Last question: who's the fancy one?
My oldest.
She knows.
Daisy's fancy pants. But they're both amazing young ladies.
Oh, I thought that was silent. T.J. Ward, Project Opioid. That's what the hell just happened. All right, welcome back to the second half of What the Health Just Happened. If you missed the first half here on the radio show, good news is you can find it on your favorite podcast platform under What the Health Just Happened. If you're on the podcast, welcome back to No Commercial Break, because we don't have sponsors yet, but we're going to keep pushing for sponsorships, including energy drinks here. We're just going to keep plugging companies. I'm kidding. TJ Ward, three-time guest, first time in this office studio. Welcome back. The previous episodes, catch them. We can put those in the show notes. I probably won't. I don't do that stuff, really.
Sounds good to say it, though.
Well, look at the show notes.
Or the show notes.
Not kidding, though. The first time we hung out on the show, episode one, pretty heavy, had a good time. Second time, heavy, had a good time. This episode, first half was
good time.
Good time, yeah.
Yeah.
Which I want to keep doing, but we got it a little bit of heavy stuff here. Healthy or not healthy?
Okay.
You know the gang.
Let's do it.
Healthy or not healthy energy drinks?
So I think there's an argument for both sides. I think healthy from the mental health standpoint, because I love them, so they bring me joy. That's my argument. That's healthy. That's my argument.
Let's roll with it.
Hey, if it makes you happy, it's got to be healthy, right? That's heavy, I know.
Yeah.
By the way, the most healthy energy drink
is Ghost Energy Drink.
Brought to you. No, I'm kidding. That's your jam right there.
I'm told if you look at TikTok, they're not healthy. I mean, unless it's the sponsor that's doing the video.
Everybody has something that helps them out.
Yeah.
Which is tough, because we're talking about fentanyl overdose and opioid crisis, which that's like, well, that's, hold on, that's the same thing.
I mean, caffeine's a drug too, right? Yeah,
that's your go-to one now.
Yeah. I like Ghost.
Celsius?
Like Celsius.
C4?
I'll drink C4. I'm a connoisseur.
He's also jacked.
I like Alani Nu. Are you familiar with
that's
this?
A-L-A-N-I?
A-L-I-N-U?
We can't spell. We're Kate.
A-L-A-N-I.
Alani Nu.
Yes,
I know
you
were right. Right. Yes, I drink. Right. All right. Healthy or not healthy, being bougie?
If you've got the money, why not? You know?
Okay.
If you can afford the lifestyle, if you worked hard and you've... I really can't, but I wish I could.
Trey, being bougie, healthy or not healthy?
My mom's really bougie. It has its good and bads. It's fun to be with a bougie person and go travel and do things because they want to do fun shit and they got no problem with spending money. So,
yeah, I guess how you define bougie, just liking the finer things in life.
That's good. What's bougie, what's not
bougie? Yeah.
Also, when did bougie become a term?
Bad and bougie?
A few years ago.
Probably like 12, 10. Yeah.
Decade ago.
Abby, do the young people still use bougie?
Well, I'm not that young. I'm about to be 30 in a couple of weeks.
About to be.
But I still say it. But I also get crap all the time that I talk like an old person.
What's the term bougie now?
She says the bomb. And I'm like, people can't say the bomb anymore. Yeah, just like when you said.
I like that.
When you, by the way, your merch is
I like, oh yeah, you know, the analogy. I like popping the brim up. I like dumb stuff though.
But like you put on their new swag.
Yep.
And I message you and
say, oh, you can't say kids, swag anymore. Yeah.
Kids are saying merch or drip. So
merch and drip. Too so fun. Yeah.
You know, bougie comes from bourgeoisie. That's the term it comes from. It was a form of like people being elite back in the day. So they just.
That's good to know. I just learned. So
it's a mentality more than it is a.
What's the Riz? Talk about Riz. Riz is another one.
Yeah.
That's short for charisma.
Yeah.
Everyone's cutting words short. I'm so embarrassed. I'm like, Riz is one. I'm like, I don't like that word.
If you need to know these things, go to urbandictionary.com.
Yeah, but I find weird stuff on Urban Dictionary when I search. Oh, that's bad.
If you want to know about these things, go to TikTok and type in the phrase, and you'll get all the information you need.
Okay. That's good. Any healthy or not healthies? Because I got one before going into some serious stuff.
Oh, healthy or not healthy, dads during summertime.
Oh.
Or bod? Be healthy. No. Just get... Well, dad bods, we're doing all right.
Yeah, right now we're good.
This is a solid crew of dad bods, I think.
You're talking about parenting with young kids?
Yes, when it's summertime.
Oh,
we're talking about this earlier today.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, kids are at home. It's such a different dynamic. Healthy or not healthy,
I'm going,
kids being at home.
Not healthy.
Sometime.
Not healthy. You can't relate to that. Here's one. Healthy.
He's been through it. Was it healthy or not healthy for you?
Summertime, kids out of school, young, what do you do?
Challenging. So you just, and again, it depends on if you have some resources, you can put them in camps where they can learn some things and be productive. But, you know, there's a lot of downtime, I think.
Healthy or not healthy, hanging out with your adult kids.
So healthy. Man, time of your life. Like, I think the greatest thing ever.
I think that's so cool. You're hanging out with them. I love it.
Yeah.
Okay. Healthy or not healthy, we'll go seriously, unless you have any healthy or not healthies.
No, man.
You got any? Because Abby, come on. Throw one out there. She's over there. Healthy or not healthy, ginger ale.
Healthy.
Healthy or not
healthy. Same reasons. I was over here just giving TJ crap about the whole mental health thing with the energy drinks, but it's technically not healthy, but it's a nice afternoon treat.
We all do the best we can. Mm-hmm. Okay, healthy or not healthy, progress in the state of Florida for overdoses.
Healthy. Heading in the right direction, let's put it that way. It's definitely not over. And so I know we're going to talk about this report that the CDC put out, and it's a reason to celebrate. I don't know if you do the thing now, the cowbell, or is that it's too really loud? It's loud.
You should, though.
Is that bad?
That's better.
That's really loud, bro.
It is loud, but that's good. Yeah, yeah. So we're cautiously optimistic that it'll continue. The challenge is there's so many different variants of, you know, drugs that are coming into the scene. That's like when you feel like you've figured it out and you're playing catch up again. So happy for the progress that's been made, you know, in the state of Florida, in Duval County and surrounding counties, nationwide, really. But I don't think we, like we said this the other day on the news, we can't take our foot off the gas. We've got to keep pushing forward, keep pouring resources into the things that are working. And then also, I'm a big proponent of taking a portion of resources and trying things we've never done before, being innovative. Because if you think about it, you know, people are always talking about evidence-based, you know, therapies or treatments or programming. And that's great. You got to do that. But before it was evidence-based, it wasn't, right? And so there was a time where all of that stuff was an innovative idea or a thought.
It wasn't even a thought.
Yeah.
And then something happened. Right. Then it was a thought.
So let's do the things that are working, but let's also try to figure out some things we haven't done and just put some money towards what if, you know, could this work? And we'll see. Just like the things we're talking about before we got on camera or started recording, the things that we have seen in the counties that we work in that have made the difference. You know, some of that stuff was innovative, and it's working. It's helping to reduce overdose deaths.
I just thought of it literally as you're saying that. It's like an unwinnable fight, but why would we stop fighting?
Yeah.
We did talk about the starfish thing before.
I was going to say, can you share that?
We did this second episode, I think. The starfish story, I love this. I think it's applicable to so many things, but especially this world, right? So a granddad takes his granddaughter out to the beach, and there are thousands of starfish on the beach. Thousands. You walk out there, they're just everywhere. And the granddaughter grabs one, throws it in the ocean, grabs one, throws it in the ocean, grabs one, throws it in the ocean. Granddad's kind of watching her, just, you know, I love you, granddaughter. And after 50, 60 starfish, she's like, what are you doing? Like, there's so many of these, you're never going to make a difference. And the granddaughter looks at his granddad and says, you know what, to that one starfish, it made a difference.
Yeah.
And that's the approach that I've really tried to take in life for everything, healthcare, not business. Like, one person, yeah, in your world, if one person hears this episode or the past episodes and it even nudges them in the right direction, that's a win.
Yeah.
That's a starfish.
And that's how we have to look at it. Abby and I have this conversation from time to time. It feels daunting, this task that we've all been, you know, given, the folks that are working on this. And by the way, the collaborations and the partnerships we have with nonprofits and really just people that care across all sectors has made what we're seeing or what we're talking about, you know, the reduction, it's made it possible. We don't do this without collaboration. So that's key. But we talk about the fact that, you know, this is probably never going to get solved completely because it always just switches and morphs into something else. And we're playing catch up. But what are we doing with what we have in the time that we're working on this to make a difference? And I think that's how you have to approach it, or it can become discouraging at times, you know, but to see progress is making it worth
all. And if you, like if everyone gives up, there always has to be one person or collaborating amongst many people. If you stop, then the king, need to go back to the star, then every starfish is gone.
Right.
That's my approach. I don't know. Some people will be like, well, it's a victimless crime. You're making those choices. It's not that simple.
No, it's not a victimless crime. In fact, if you sit with the parents of, you know, young people that have overdosed or even accidentally been poisoned by fentanyl, and then you talk to them and you find out that their siblings are struggling, and then their friends struggle, and then they're, you know, if they're older adults, maybe they have coworkers that, you know, are impacted by this, and it's just a ripple effect that never stops.
I did not set the timer, Trey. I don't know if you're watching this, by the way. Doesn't matter. We can edit this part out, too. I'm guessing we'll say 18 minutes. Let's go good news. It's always, I commend you two for fighting this fight over and over and over and going and speaking to communities, especially here in Northeast Florida. It's daunting. It's exhausting. Last year was a win, right?
It was a win. Yeah.
CDC, U.S. overdose deaths decrease in 2023 for the first time since 2018.
Yeah.
Let's take the win.
Yes, that's a absolutely. Win. You know, we've saw about an 8% decrease in the state of Florida. You know, in Duval County, 3% reduction. I'm horrible at math, but it's thousands. Yeah.
23% of that's a lot of starfish. Say it again, Abby.
23% of 111,000.
Yeah.
That's quite a few. Let's just say top.
What do we have on here? I think I can't read this, but it's highlighted for you. If you want to read that.
Provisional data from CDC's National Center for Health Statistics indicate that there was an estimated 107,000 drug overdoses deaths in the United States during 2023, a decrease of 3% from 111. Now I got to do math. Yeah. Made me read that too. We might have to edit that reading out.
So we just know that it's gone down.
So it's a minimum of, let's say, 6,000. 6,000 lives in the state of Florida.
That's a small town.
I mean,
it's not exciting. You can't put this on the news and like win that versus so-and-so's son died of an overdose. But guess what? 6,000 lives.
I tell you
it's a big deal, man.
If you spoke with the dozens of parents that we've sat down with who've lost a child, and I say a child, they're teenagers, or most of them are in their 20s, but they would say that that was a significant number, and they would wish that their child was one of those statistics. That's the thing. A lot of times we throw these numbers around, and we throw these data points and these percentages of increase and decrease, and we forget that every one of these numbers represents a human life that was either lost or, in this case, you know, that made it another day.
I feel bad. I didn't read this. I love, like, specific numbers. Here it is, measurable, which, again, we can – maybe that's the next conversation, like numbers, and then we just talk about White Claws and High Noons and all that stuff.
Sometimes you need a White Claw or a High Noon to talk about some of this stuff.
We laugh before we record about different types of
– seltzers.
Yeah, seltzers. This to me is in a world of just bad news, bad news, bad news, bad news, and people fighting day after day, minute after minute, month after month. There was a decrease last year for the first time in a long time in overdoses. So that's worth celebrating.
It. Yeah, take that win. We don't stop.
Oh, you know, we never stop fighting.
And that's the thing. Like, if we could get in front of lawmakers, which a lot of people do, you know, you have to advocate for more funding so that we can continue to, you know, see that snowball effect take place. You've got a lot of the things that we've seen working need more funding, you know, push that way so that we can continue to save lives.
Yeah, can you give some examples of where the results are happening?
You said, what funding? You talk about innovating. Like, what do you think? Flood money, where can we flood innovation?
What we've seen work in the counties that we're, you know, working with, and even across the state of Florida with the other project opioids, is awareness, making sure that, you know, people are being educated on what the current narrative of the overdose crisis looks like, what's causing deaths, which, as we know, is still fentanyl, primarily fake pills disguised as prescription meds. You know, don't experiment with drugs anymore. You can't do that. Everything's got the potential for, you know, death, not just some kind of bad high.
Yeah.
You could literally die from.
So respiratory system
shut down. Push that out, because as much as we talk about it and get tired of hearing ourselves say it, there are people in the communities that we serve that still have never heard that. And so it's important to keep that out in front of the media. You know, we have tremendous media partners beyond y'all with podcasts and the radio show, but even the news and just
everyone.
Yeah. Just helping us get the word out. So awareness. Education, more Narcan across, you know, different communities. So we've seen that make a huge impact, getting more naloxone in the hands of people, training them how to use it so that they're not afraid to act if they walk up to somebody that, you know, or walk past somebody that's experiencing an overdose.
Let me plug this now. Like we make sure it's about sponsorships. Narcan sponsor this show. I'm not talking about paying for the show. Access to Narcan is now more available than it was. When I was at the fire department, there's a shortage.
Yeah.
Every business owner, every parent, every school, I think, like we're talking about Northeast Florida, but nationwide. If you're in Northeast Florida and you don't have Narcan next to your AED,
you should.
You can be delusional. We don't need it, but you, Narcan everywhere. It's inexpensive. It's so easy to use. And who cares if you throw it out?
Right.
Why would you not have it?
Well, right now it's free because of grant funding that's coming from, you know, the settlement funds. But so, and that's the other thing. If a listener wants Narcan, you can buy it at the pharmacy now. It's $50 at Publix. Don't do that. Contact us. Reach out to Eric, you know, personally.
TJ Ward. Hey, you can call me. You can call. I don't want to share my cell phone, but.
Yeah.
Social media channels. They can message us on Facebook.
Say it again.
Us on Facebook or Instagram, Project Opioid Jax on both Facebook and Instagram. If you want free Narcan, we can definitely get it to you.
And the other thing we're trying to do, thinking of moving forward, is get this in the hands of businesses, train their employees, their management, their HR on how to use it, have it in the places of business. It's easy to use. It's a 5-minute training. It's something that is, you know, I think most people could figure it out.
If you and I can figure it out, yeah, anyone could figure it out.
Especially with the directions on the inside flap of the box. But, you know, we like to share some of the things that people should know. But, you know, businesses get these resources to them free of charge, the training to them free of charge. That's part of what we do through the chamber, is try to engage with businesses and help them understand that it's important that they create a recovery-friendly workplace for those who might be struggling. And it's easy to do. It's not a heavy lift. There's some things that we can do for them right now that are free of charge because grant funds pay for it. So we would love to connect with any of the businesses that listen to your show.
I love that.
And talk to them about it. So
Trey's chomping at the bit to say something.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, why is Narcan not in like your first aid kit? Could that be a...
It absolutely could. That's how we try to promote it, because there are still people that have the stigma of what Narcan could do as far as enable people to, you know, continue to use, or, you know, that it is some mysterious thing that they wouldn't be able to do or use. And it's really simple. So we try to promote for that and advocate for that and make it a part of your first aid kit, put it with your defibrillator. You know, that it's there for when you need it. A lot of medical professionals are using Narcan first before they try to figure out what's really wrong.
Yeah, first book.
Because it can't hurt. It can only help. So if somebody's not experiencing an overdose and you put Narcan in their nasal,
it's nothing else.
Yep. Can't hurt them. But it can save their life.
Why?
And that's part of why we want to get in front of some of these businesses or anybody, any organization, to help them understand some of the things they might have questions. Like, when you take it out, you don't prime it because it's a one pump thing. So as soon as you deploy it, it's gone. People need to know that.
Let's dive a little more into that too, to like promote this. So I think that's it. We work with businesses all the time. It's not a fun topic. You know, it's like, hey, by the way, there might be a person in your company that's taking opioids that's laced with fentanyl. Like, it's not exciting,
right?
But the right people, it matters.
Sure.
Just have it there. Understand how simple it is. Cost, I don't want to say cost effective. There is no cost. Or if there is, like, why would you not? Is my
thing.
Why would you not?
I think, again, the stigma, you know, there, you know, we don't want to think that there could be people that are in
Yeah, no one in my office
in
has taken
organization that is struggling with this. But the truth is, there are, and it's impact. In fact, the leading cost for employers related to healthcare has to do with substance use disorder and mental health. And Abby mentioned this earlier. I can't remember if she said it when we were recording, but it's the leading cause of death for people under the age of 50, overdose.
Let's go stats. Yeah. You that's just it. Yeah, that was deep. That was deep, Abby.
So think about who's working in the majority of the, you know, of the workplace.
Less than 50 right now.
So, you know, it's a thing that is impacting all of us, whether we're willing to admit it or not. And if you don't have folks who are struggling, then chances are you have people that work for you that have somebody else,
spouses,
they really
kids.
Care about.
Yeah.
They may have left them there to go to work, and now all they can think about while they're trying to work for you is, I hope my child's not trying to get into some pills, or, you know, I hope they're not overdosing.
So again, 212 Benefits, our company, we work in employee benefits. It's not exciting. It's expensive, right? So every year, the costs that we work in, they go up every single year. 8% increase is pretty normal, which is what industry can your costs go up 8 to 10% every year and you're okay with that. So an 8% decrease, that's a big deal.
There you go.
Right? Yeah. If you're growing a business and you go 8% year over year, you're celebrating.
It's a great
if you're trying to cut costs as a business owner and it goes down 8%, you're celebrating. I think.
Back to what you said, why wouldn't you? Especially if somebody's offering you free resources to help bring that cost down. You know, if you've got people who are healthy in your organization and aren't, you know, getting the resources they need to address this issue, then they're saving you money.
You two, by the way, are a direct correlation with that. I can't commend you two enough. That this is an exhausting grind, I would assume, going out and talking about a topic that's not shiny. It's not like, hey, business, let's make you more money by selling this product. It's like, we want to talk about possibly losing lives and your employees that are dealing with this. So I commend you.
Three
things. You said increased awareness. You nailed that. Increased distribution of Narcan.
Yep.
Again, not exciting, but matters. What was the third?
So the utilization of what are referred to as peer support specialists. And these are people who are who have lived experience. They've gone through this in their own lives. And so now they're giving back. They've become certified on how to navigate the recovery process, and they can help people who have overdosed and are coming out of that. Maybe they're in the hospital. You know, they come alongside them and say, hey, I've been where you are, and I can help you take the next step. And I can walk you through that, what we refer to as a continuum of care, to get the help you need, to get the, you know, resources, the counseling, the mental health counseling, the medication, you know, the group therapy. We can help you get through that. And so a lot of times people who are, you know, in the grips of addiction will listen to somebody that's been where they are way more than they're going to listen to somebody like you or me who has never had, you know, been there before.
I'll share my, like, I've had addiction issues. I don't mind sharing, not that world. So I've lost, my brother passed away, not from this, but I think stories matter. So the peer reviewed stuff, is that a family member? Like, we'll give a shout out to Brock Powell. He's got a great story.
Yeah.
Getting closer with him. That's how we met. Him and I met originally was through you. Those peers supporting, is that someone who experienced the issues and demons or a family member who lost someone?
It could be both. But a lot of times it's somebody that's been there personally has experienced that, what it's like to need that, or to, you know, to experience a withdrawal from that. So they're willing to do whatever it takes to not have to go through that pain. And so they know what it's like to come out of that, you know, and to get healthy and to be able to, you know, take their next step forward in that recovery process. So now they can help somebody who's, you know, just experienced the overdose, and what is the next step they take? How do they get access to those resources? So we say somebody that has lived experience because, again, they have a story that they can share with somebody that, you know, and they're living proof of the fact that the
evidence
that you can be
evidence-based practice.
Yeah.
There's nothing more powerful.
Yeah.
So increased awareness, must. Increased distribution of Narcan, have it available, it's inexpensive. Increased peer support specialist.
Yeah.
What else? Like, what's some, like, you're like, man, I think we could add.
I would say
this helped.
Like,
we added a fourth or fifth to the list.
Yeah. I think this goes with the education part, you know, if you say awareness education, but breaking down the stigma, we talk about the stigma that's associated with this. You know, if you can help people understand that this is a disease and not a moral failure, it's not like these people, you know, intentionally want to be in the grips of this addiction. It's that their brain has been rewired by this substance. And now, you know, in order to avoid withdrawal, they're going to do whatever they can to get that back in their body. So, you know, breaking down the stigma. So if people can learn that this, again, is not a moral failure, they could show some compassion towards those who are struggling. And that really can make a huge impact all the way around.
She's falling asleep. I was pointing at Abby, by the way. I love pointing. Anything you'd add to that? What's, like, you've lived in this for a bit. Anything you'd add, like, man, if we could just start doing more of this, besides the big three ones, increased awareness, increased
Yeah, I think getting to kids when they're as young as possible, as soon as some other child is able to comprehend you and how it can affect them later in life, they need to be educated about this. Parents need to be educated about this. They need to be talking to their kids. You know, to be wary. Don't ever take something that a friend might give you. You know, it, the most, what is it, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. If we can prevent young people and empower them to get the mental health services that they need before they need to go and self-medicate, you know, dumping money and resources and time into preventing it from happening in the first place is...
Prevention is more powerful than treatment, I think.
And that's, you know, that's really what we do. And we have so many partners that are on the treatment and recovery side, and that is absolutely needed. I mean, the majority of the people that struggle are in need of those services. So, but if we can, you know, like a partner organization of ours says, if we can get upstream and try to head it off before it even becomes an issue, then not only you're saving money, taxpayer dollars, you know, funding from grant resources, but you're saving lives because people aren't even going down that path to begin with.
I didn't set the timer correctly, so I don't know if that's accurate. But I got a really heavy question we're not going to be able to go into. This is tough.
Okay.
What makes more money in the United States, sick people or healthy people?
Oh, sick people.
That's a heavy, again, that's like a really, really brutal thing to open up and talk about. Maybe next time we talk about that, I'd love to.
Yeah.
Any more thing that we, like, shout outs, proud moments, what's coming up, right? Let's do that. What's coming up? Like, but I'm like, man, we did this. I'm so proud of what we've done in the last 6 months. Here it is.
So something we recently did back in May with Sheriff Hardwick in St. John's County is one of our overdose awareness seminars. We do this in the counties in which we work, where we bring the community together and share with them what it looks like, you know, in their specific context. So we have a panel of subject matter experts like the sheriff, you know, like the fire chief, like
in the trenches,
superintendent of the public school system, a medical director from a treatment facility, and just ask them specific questions and let them use their expertise to explain to the community, here's what we're doing to address it. Here's what it looks like. You know, what was really impactful is in the middle of the Q&A, because I moderate the event and the Q&A, you know, panel, in the middle of it, while we were live at the event, the sheriff and the medical director for the fire rescue department both received a call of a 14-year-old boy who overdosed, and their people were being deployed to that overdose while we were. Yeah. So it was a real-time example. I'm getting chills. It was a real-time example of this is happening in your community. Yeah. You know, some of the wealthier communities don't necessarily like to talk about it as much.
It doesn't exist.
But I tell you what, the leaders in that community are bringing it front and center. And so it was a huge win, not only for the community, for those organizations, but for us, you know, to see like this event come together and so many people collaborating to make a difference. And so that was really special. I think that was really cool.
You don't know the date. We had a walk coming up.
Got a walk coming up. We do know the date. We're just trying to get the permit. Shout out to Mayor Hoffman, Jacks Beach.
Mayor Hoffman, Jacks Beach.
So we're going to do August the 31st is International Overdose Awareness Day. So we are doing a memorial walk in Jacksonville Beach. We'll start at 9:30 in the morning, and it'll go probably till 11:30 or so. We'll have some vendors out there to share resources. We'll give a brief presentation, and then we'll do about a mile walk just in remembrance of those who've lost their lives to drug overdose.
Yeah. Okay. We have a young lady who her brother passed, and this was her idea. She wanted to honor her brother and help other people, help bring awareness to the fact that this is happening, you know, in her community. And so she kind of spearheaded this. We're partnering with her along with several other organizations to make this a reality. And again, Mayor Hoffman has always been so good to help us with press conferences or events that we've done. Yeah. So we're confident that we'll have the permitting we need to do that, but we're hoping that people will come out and just show some support by walking a half a mile down and a half a mile back. And, you know, again,
the more the merrier.
Yeah.
Always a heavy topic. Good and bad. We had some fun the first half. Right?
Yeah, we did.
But if you don't talk about it, what changes? Nothing.
Exactly.
If you don't share the information, nothing changes. So that was a blast.
We appreciate you giving us a platform.
Oh, anytime you will. Other than one day, like, let's just have fun.
Let's just some fun stuff. Yeah.
TJ Ward, the hat trick. Oh, I don't like 3P. The hat trick's good. Third time here, first time in this studio.
First guest in this studio,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, man. I mean, we've had one here, but that was before we redid it. It got really weird.
Okay.
The heat kicked on. It was a mess. Doesn't matter. TJ Ward, Project Opioid, thank you for joining. Three times now, you're coming back. That's what the health just happened.